I'm Algernon Cash, and you're locked in. Before we begin today's conversation, I want to acknowledge something up front. The work we do here, long-form conversations, thoughtful dialogue, and space for nuance doesn't happen by accident. It takes time, preparation, and resources. And free, independent content like this simply isn't possible without support. If you value these conversations and you want to help sustain them, I invite you to visit lockedin.cash to become a supporter. Your contribution directly makes this work possible. Now, today's conversation is intentionally different. For years, when I've sat down with leaders in Greensboro, we've talked about growth, new projects, momentum, optimism, and the future we were building. And much of that story was real, but this season feels heavier. Over the past year, we've seen a noticeable rise in restaurant and small business closures across the city. Not just new concepts struggling to find footing, but longtime institutions, places that felt permanent. Joining me today is former Mayor Robbie Perkins. He knows the city deeply. From public service, from business, and from civic leadership, he's also coming off a bruising municipal election, which gives him a unique perspective on this moment. This isn't a political conversation. It's not about blame. It's about honesty and about what's happening, why it feels different, and what this moment is revealing about the economic reality within Greensboro. Robbie, how you doing, man? Thank you for locking in.
Well, Algernon, it's a pleasure to be here, as always, and excited to talk about Greensboro, North Carolina, and all the good things that are happening here.
Yeah. You know, I think this might be your first long form conversation since last year's election. So I think let's just start there. My audience knows that you and I are friends. I'm a Robbie Perkins fan. You know, I was certainly rooting for you to become mayor of Greensboro and was excited about maybe you returning to the mayor's office, but that didn't quite happen. So what's your thoughts about that election and your reaction to the outcome?
Well, you know, it was a Democratic sweep. And even though it was a nonpartisan election, the parties got involved. And when 75% of your electorate has voted for Kamala Harris or Joe Biden or Hillary Clinton in the last three presidential elections, and they get motivated to turn out because they don't like what's happening in Washington, and you're a registered Republican, well, things didn't turn out very well. We were trying to keep this as a nonpartisan race. It had always been a nonpartisan race. But I have to say, Algernon, I think the days of nonpartisan city council elections in Greensboro are over.
I think you're right. I think that's over across the country. You know, it just seems that partisanship has entered in every election. And I've always said that I think when it comes to the police showing up on time and garbage trucks showing up on time and fire trucks getting out to your house, those aren't partisan type decisions. I mean, you just want really smart people in those roles. I guess one more question about the last year's election, just getting your thoughts about it. You know, it looks like it was sort of a total sweep on the Greensboro Council, a lot of new faces there. What are your thoughts about this new freshman council that Greensboro has?
Well, you know, I didn't win, and so I've moved on. It seems like the thing to do when you lose an election is go back to work, and I've done that, and our real estate business is thriving, and so I've been focused on that. I hope the council gets their feet on the ground and does some things. We've got a lot of needs in our community, and I tried to articulate my position and the voters went in another direction. But I still will maintain that job growth and economic development, increasing the tax base, are the ways that you pay for the social services that this group seems to be focused on. So if we're not really pushing for large tax-based projects and growth in that sector, our coffers will not have enough money in it long term to pay for the basic services, not much less the social service emphasis that this council and the previous council seem to have evolved to.
And just for purpose of my audience, I do want to say this just from some on the record. We did extend an invitation to Mayor Abdeswader to join us after last year's municipal election, but that invitation went unanswered. We would love to have Mayor Abdeswader join us on the Locked In program and talk about what's going on in Greensboro from her perspective. so that you do get a full perspective of what's going on in the community. You know, Robbie, you and I have connected for many, many years talking about Greensboro, but today's conversation feels a little bit different. We're normally getting together to talk about all the growth and momentum that's happening in Greensboro. Today's conversation is about restaurants and businesses closing up. What do you think has shifted in Greensboro this past year?
Well, you know, this is a long-term situation. This isn't something that just happened overnight. And I'll have to say that the three or four restaurants closing up is a blow to our downtown, particularly the long-term stable names. And I've gone to all of them and patronized all of them, the Dame's Chicken and Waffles, and I never left there hungry. And the Silly and Scone, I can say the same thing, really good food. And then of course, my place when the snow is on the ground, I need a chicken pot pie and some Brussels sprouts, McCool's, always one of my favorites. I have fond memories of shutting that bar down after one of the international or the national Scholastic Track and Field Championships, when a bunch of the guys were in town that I used to run against, and they're now coaching, and I took them out to McCool's, and we had one heck of a time. That'll be a classic night for my whole life.
I'm familiar with all the names that you mentioned, and I love Dame's. I've waited an hour to have those chicken and waffles, and they're definitely worth the wait. You know, I don't want to contribute to any rumors, so I'm not going to say any specific restaurant names. But you know, there are more rumors swirling around online right now, Robbie, that we're going to see more restaurant closures in Greensboro. So do you think what we're seeing right now, this emerging trend, I mean, you're in the real estate business, you're talking to people about properties and what they're going to lease, you're on the front line of business activity. Is this more structural or is this just temporary?
Well, I think what this is just that the restaurant business is very difficult. I mean, Algernon, you're an expert in restaurant consulting, and I don't know what the national statistics are with new restaurant startups, but high percentage of those do go out of business over time, and concepts do get stale, and their popularity dwindles, and they get out of business. People get tired in the restaurant business. It's hard work. When I was at Duke and in business school, I worked 3 years in the catering business, and so you know I was a waiter, and lots of fun when you're young and you're energetic, but you do it for 10 or 15 or 20 years, and it may be time to do something else. I haven't seen anything from these restaurant closures where any of these restaurateurs are blaming anybody. You know, they're basically saying it's time and we're shutting down. And so I think that we have to really look at fundamental issues in our downtown that need to be addressed to create an environment where the restaurants that are there now can sustain their business, and the ones that come and backfill the second generation spaces will be successful.
Well, I definitely think you're right when you say the restaurant business is highly competitive. And, you know, you look around, Robbie, and it seems like there's one or two restaurants opening every single day, and the space is getting even more flooded, more competitive. Operating costs are much higher. Lease rates are obviously going higher. I mean, everything is just a little bit more just structurally higher. And then I think operators are tired from the pandemic era. I mean, you've got operators that have been running uphill since 2020. They still haven't seen any relief. They're still not really making any profit. And I just think operators are looking at lease renewals and looking at the business and saying, okay, maybe it's time to exit. I mean, do you think that what we're seeing right now, I mean, this sort of wave of closings that are happening with restaurants, is it just contained to restaurants in Greensboro, or are you seeing that spill over to other industries?
Well, I think labor is a big issue, and it has been since the pandemic. I mean, wages obviously have risen, but just finding people to do the jobs is a real challenge. And the turnover in personnel is a real challenge. So I think that's across the board. But the restaurant business is you know, that's notorious for high turnover. And it's a real struggle to get somebody to open a restaurant at, you know, 5 a.m. And at the same time, close it at 2 p.m. or 2 a.m. the next morning. I mean, we've got that kind of scenario in that business. But I think we've got the labor situation has changed since the pandemic, and people value their time more and maybe don't want to work at some of these jobs.
Well, I mean, you know, from a leasing perspective and what you do with in terms of real estate, I mean, are you just hearing like just actual operators, not necessarily employees, but operators and owners that are just expressing that they're exhausted with the business?
Oh yeah. It's a tough business. But one of the things about existing restaurants, when they close, it creates an opportunity for a new restaurant to come in, because some of the big cost of doing a restaurant is putting that kitchen together and a hood, and all of those things can run you $500,000. And if they're already in place, somebody can clean it up and get a positive health and department inspection and be ready to go into business. So there's always somebody willing to lease a second generation restaurant.
Well, let's also shift the conversation to consumers as well, because, you know, I made a post last night that I think has been making its round on Facebook and Instagram. It's gotten a lot of attention overnight. And, you know, within the post, Robbie, I just make the argument that although I think the restaurant industry is very hard and competitive, you know, I just think that consumers and American families are financially exhausted. You know, everything's been going up for 5 years straight. And, you know, all the government subsidies and the PPPs and all the things that came out during the pandemic era are gone. I think savings are much more thinner than they've ever been. I think when you look at credit card delinquencies, they're starting to creep up because the American consumer is stretched pretty thin. And, you know, I think that it's not that local residents want to watch all their local businesses shut down. They really want to see them sustained, but they don't necessarily have the money to go out and spend like they once did. What are you hearing from Greensboro residents, just ordinary residents in Greensboro right now?
Well, I think you really have to look at the underlying fundamentals of who Greensboro is. Our average household income is about $58,000, and that's below the North Carolina average for larger cities. And our downtown average is about $50,000, and a lot of that's because we have a lot of students in our downtown, and so that's going to bring the numbers down. So you have to look at the capacity to pay, The overriding issues are beyond restaurants. The perception of downtown to the folks that I talk a lot to, and these folks have disposable income and they do eat out frequently, is that they don't want to come downtown because their perception is it's not safe. They don't want to get panhandled on the streets. The homeless population is there. They see them. And, you know, when you're trying to do a sidewalk dining piece and you've got muscle cars rumbling up and down Elm Street and blowing you out when you're sitting on the sidewalk, it's not a pleasant experience. And I've talked to a dozen people at least, and I could probably, you know, talk to another 20 more that said, we're just not going back downtown. And these are people with money, with disposable income, that have choices. And people vote with their pocketbooks. If the experience is not pleasant, they're not coming back. And I've heard a lot of that about our downtown. I've got some suggestions to change it. I don't know whether the council will focus on that or not. But I would be very concerned about increased police presence in our downtown. I think at night now we have 4 police officers in our downtown. We used to have 14. And I know there's staffing shortages and budgetary constraints and everything like that, but if people don't perceive that they're safe in downtown, then that's an issue. And this isn't all, you know, elderly white people. This is African-American students from A&T. We had a lot of conversations during the campaign, and all of them felt like there were things that needed to be done downtown to make them feel safer. The other thing is, frankly, downtown is dirty. And it just needs to not that there's trash on the streets. Our folks are doing a good job with what they have, but Elm Street hasn't been taken care of for 40 years. I mean, it looks, it is substandard. There's no, this isn't just an opinion. This is, you can't go on Elm Street and walk up and down Elm Street and tell me that it looks good. It is not acceptable. And we have chosen to not spend resources on that street to get it to where it should be. Now, the bones of Elm Street in Greensboro are superb. We have one of the outstanding main streets in terms of facades that you have anywhere. But we have not taken advantage of that community asset to really launch to the next level. And I'm convinced that if we don't pay 100% attention to Elm Street and turn that street into what it can be, that we will miss out. For example, the Crest Building in downtown. How long has it been sitting vacant? I know people have come up with ideas.
15 years, I think.
Yeah, well, what do you got to do to turn it around? The 300 block of South Elm Street, and I'll name names. I mean, Sidney Gray and Miller Furniture. I mean, those guys have been sitting on those buildings for 30 years. And come on, let's get out and let's come together as a community and do things to activate the buildings, turn them into exciting, interesting places, and go. I'll have to say that, you know, one of the reasons I think that Silla and Stone went out of business is because every time you'd go in there, you'd be stepping over people on the streets. And you know, you want to give the homeless a hand up as opposed to, you know, anything else. But it's, you just can't expect customers to go to restaurants and have to be panhandled. It's just not going to work. And Greensboro's situation is not unique, but it's also not acceptable. So either we're going to have a thriving restaurant scene in our downtown and thriving businesses in our downtown, or we're going to allow the situation to continue where customers don't want to come back.
You know, Robbie, I really appreciate that. You said a mouthful. And, you know, I know yesterday, Zach Matheny, who's president of downtown Greensboro, made a pretty long post that I read, and I've been following that thread. And I think many of the things that you just said around the parking situation, homelessness, public safety, those seem to be reoccurring themes when I was sort of reading through that thread. I also totally agree with you. Everything you just said is not unique to Greensboro. I've written and talked about these same things over in downtown Winston extensively, and we've had that conversation numerous times right here on the Locked In Show. I think you've got some other downtown areas in North Carolina that are experiencing struggles. I've written about that in the Carolina Journal last year. But I think downtowns are the cornerstone to every single community. You must have a strong downtown. You must have a strong central business district. So when you talk about some of the panhandling, Robbie, the homelessness situation, some of the perceptions around public safety, those things aren't new. They seem to be reoccurring. But what do we really do about them? I mean, do we start locking up homeless people because they don't have anywhere to go?
Well, you know, I think you got to start with simple stuff. You got to put some bathrooms where it's accessible in our downtown. You know, I mean, whether I'm a homeless person or I'm Robbie Perkins taking my 5 mile walk, you know, if I've got to go to the bathroom, where do I go? That's a challenge. So, you know, that's something that I think we need to kind of look at how we deal with just a simple thing like that. But I also don't think that you can allow folks to stand on corners and panhandle. And I think you've got to toughen those ordinances as tough as they can be. And when I was in elected office, we had a pretty tough panhandling ordinance. And it seemed that as soon as we left, the council turned that around, and it hasn't turned around since. But I think somebody's got to be held responsible for results. And the results at this point are not acceptable. And downtown businesses are suffering. Your point is very valid, that the key to a successful and vibrant city is a vibrant downtown. The cities that have vibrant downtowns in the United States, in the world, are successful cities. Those that don't, aren't. We're already struggling in Greensboro because 20% of our population is below the poverty line. That's huge. Our median household income is low and lower than our peer cities. Now, there are a lot of jobs coming in here, but those jobs aren't coming tomorrow. And they're probably not going to be held by folks that aren't educated, don't have the proper training, and can't get to the jobs because they don't have any transportation, much less they're living in substandard housing. So we've got issues we have to fix. But I will contend, and this is back to where I started today, that if you don't grow your tax base and you don't have a thriving downtown, you can't address, you're not going to have the money to address homelessness. You're not going to have the money to address housing. You're not going to have the money to address workforce training. You go downhill when you don't build that tax base. And a downtown area is your best place to build that tax base. But you got to have cooperation across governmental lines to do that. Right now, we got to set the table for what I see as a really strong 10 years of growth in Greensboro. And we don't have the tools in place to do that. We can't put a TIF, tax increment financing package, together in downtown Greensboro today that includes Guilford County. That has to happen. And I don't care who's at war in terms of personalities, who needs to be in one job or another, but if Guilford County and the city of Greensboro and Guilford County and the city of High Point cannot come together and successfully partner in tax increment financing, then all of us suffer. And the people that are going to suffer the most are those that our elected bodies are trying to help, but they're not going to have the money to do it because they're not building that substantial tax base. Tax increment financing is how these other cities have made it happen. And we have to get to that point. And it's at this point, I see it as a personality deal. And we're fighting internally as opposed to getting our act together and putting the tax increment financing tool in our quiver so that we can pull it out and execute when the opportunities come to us.
You know, Robbie, what I love about this conversation and what you're doing right now is you're talking about the underlying realities. And oftentimes, I think we're talking about symptoms. So we talk about restaurants closing, we talk about businesses closing, but we're not talking about the underlying reality that is driving those closures. And I appreciate you shedding some light on this. When you look around the state of North Carolina right now, everything is gangbusters. I mean, we're the number one state to do business in the last 5 years. We're creating a significant amount of jobs. I mean, we are everybody wants to be North Carolina right now and some of the growth that we're experiencing. When you come to the micro level in terms of what's happening with Greensboro in the context of what's going on with North Carolina, how concerned are you that Greensboro might blow its opportunity here?
Well, Greensboro's got 3,340 people living downtown. That's the latest survey that I saw. And that may be a little bit below where you want to be for a city of 300,000 people. It's about 1% of your population. So we're below there. But if you take a 1 mile radius of your downtown, you've got 28,000 people in that 1 mile radius, which puts us about between 9 and 10%, which is where our peer cities are. So we've got people living within 1 mile of our downtown. And I would suggest that that's where we focus. That's your real market, how to draw those people in. And, you know, when you look at who's using our downtown, there's a lot of folks from the east side of town using our downtown. And why are they using our downtown? Because they don't have any place to go on the east side of town. So they're coming into downtown. So it's but you got to get the whole city, everybody in our city has to say, we're going to enjoy our downtown. We're going to celebrate this together. It's the one place in our town that we can all get together. And every successful city in the Southeast, Chattanooga, Greenville, South Carolina, Spartanburg, Durham, Knoxville, have all taken these downtowns seriously. They've invested dollars in them and they're ready to go. Now, I know DGI has a plan, has a downtown plan, 2035. They brought it out. I think the plan is fine. I just don't think that there's enough money in the city of Greensboro to do it all at once. And I would submit that we have to focus solely on Elm Street and make Elm Street the greatest main street in the state. And once we do that, and once we make people feel safe on Elm Street, the character is already there. The bones are already there. There are certain sections of Elm Street that are really cool. But let's make the whole thing work. And then we've got something. And it's not that expensive. That's the thing about Elm Street. It may cost $50, $60 million, but it's not $200 million. So let's get on Elm Street and make it happen. Let's do it with a sense of urgency. I mean, we have missed the repopulation of housing in downtown because interest rates have gone up, construction costs are gone up. And frankly, your average rents, you see the numbers and you say, okay, I can do about $1,600 a month. Well, you can't do the numbers in an apartment complex today, downtown setting, and rent it for less than $2,000 a month. So we got a gap there. How do we close that gap? And how do we bring more residential into downtown? We've got to bring more residential downtown. I don't see a huge resurgence in office in any of these downtowns anytime soon. Too many people are still working remote. But I do see that we've got to really emphasize our residential in our downtown and do whatever it takes to do that. And part of that's parking. I mean, if you don't have good parking for an apartment complex or a condo complex, they're not going to build downtown. You got to have parking. So who's going to provide the parking? That's where the city and the county have got to subsidize through TIF financing to make that happen.
You know, Robbie, you said earlier, and I'm about to run out of time, so it's probably my last question, but you said earlier there wasn't a lot of finger pointing. There's not a lot of blame. But when I go on Facebook and I look at some of the social media chatter, it does seem to be a lot of finger pointing and it does seem to be a lot of blame. People are pointing fingers at Zach Matheny at DGI. They do think he's not necessarily doing a great job at DGI. They highlight a lot of things. There's a page now out there called Yo Greensboro that seems to be dedicated to attacking DGI and pointing fingers. Talk a little bit about some of the social media chatter and the blame that's going around when it comes to some of these issues.
You know, I went to Oklahoma City, 15, 20 years ago, and we studied Oklahoma City after they were completely on the mat after the bombing there, and they recreated themselves. One of the things that I took away from that visit was that they brought everybody into the conversation. They brought the detractors in as well as the proponents. And I think we've got to do a much better job of that. You've got folks that are, and I don't agree with a lot of the tactics that they've used. They've been, frankly, brutal, but they're not all wrong. And they need to be listened to. I think transparency is huge. I think accountability is huge. And that has to be the cornerstone of bringing this downtown back. And I would have to say, and I'll say it right here, I would challenge the board of directors of DGI to step up, not in their behind the scenes stuff. I would have to say they've got to step up and be a board of directors and tell people what that organization is doing. They've got an executive director in Zach Matheny. He's taking all the bullets. But there are substantial people on that board of directors of DGI. And it's time for that body as a whole to step up and say, we want to lead this city council. We want to help you create a vibrant downtown and invite these naysayers to the table and listen to them. They're not all wrong. Some of the stuff that's been printed may be exaggerated, but you've got expense reports there that frankly are unexplainable. If I'm on a board and I see that expense report, I'm going to have something to say about it. And it deserves an explanation, not silence. And I think part of the reason that we've got this conversation going, and the conversation is like a cancer. I mean, This conversation is a cancer that's eating away at our community's ability to deal with the downtown issues because we're always fighting and jabbing and pushing, and we're not all together working on solving problems. I mean, the problems that we've got to solve in our downtown, the public safety piece, perception that it's not safe, the homeless issue, the panhandling issue, the empty storefronts, the restaurant closings, all of that is hard, hard stuff to deal with. It's especially hard when you've got our citizens throwing rocks at each other all the time. And it has to stop. It needs to bloody stop. And it can't continue because we cannot be successful with the current level of static. The static is dominating the conversation instead of solutions dominating the conversation. Now, I want to end this conversation, and I know you got to go. The Pirtle is opening up in Greensboro. The Pirtle is the remake of the Triad Stage. It is a project of some super community people, Durant Bell, Arthur Samet. You know, it's got super folks behind this thing. They're going to open up. When they open that venue up, that section of Elm Street's got to look good and it's got to feel safe. And if it does, it doesn't do both of those things, their opening will not be successful. We got to get the people downtown. We got to keep them downtown, and they've got to feel safe and they got to have a great experience. And somebody's got to focus on that and make that happen. We've got Roy Carroll doing a $60 million AC Marriott with a restaurant on top of it. I mean, good things are happening in our downtown. And I don't want to talk about and dwell on restaurant closures when I've got good things like that happening. What I want to see is I want to see the board at DGI step up. And I know they're sick of these detractors' crap. But the only way these detractors get any attention is to make it so outrageous that people start paying attention. And I can tell you that people all over this city are paying attention to the quote-unquote mess in our downtown. Well, we've got to step up and take care of it. It's not the city council's job. It's not DGI's job. It's all of our jobs. We've all got to come together and be positive about fixing it. I would contend that we need to make Elm Street our number one priority. I know we've got this plan, but I throw everything else out. I make Elm Street our number one priority. I would challenge the city council to put the short-term police resources in there to up the presence and make our city safe. I would challenge the city council to put long-term capital in place to remake Elm Street. Just walk down Elm Street with me. Walk down Elm Street. It is totally unacceptable. It looks like crap. We've got to change it. If we don't change it, this will be a reflection on our city. I cannot bring a business person into downtown Greensboro and show downtown Greensboro off in its current state. And I'm trying to sell Greensboro every day, and I can't do it because of the way it is. And we've got to change it. And this is a collective we, and it can't be done with a bunch of rock throwing from one party to the other. Leadership's got to step up.
Robbie, I don't think you need any more coffee today. So
I haven't had any coffee, Algernon. If I had coffee, I'd be standing up and I'd really be going at it.
Well, if you had coffee, you'd really be on one today. I mean, obviously I've known you for a very long time. I know how much you love Greensboro, and I think your passion is coming through today. And I'm so thankful and grateful that I reached out to you, invited you to have this conversation. And I know that my audience and even the Greensboro audience got a lot of value from listening to you today. To my audience, we do have Zach Matheny, the executive director of DGI. He's coming on next week for a conversation. We will record that live on Facebook on Monday at 12 noon. So if you want to join us and ask questions and hear directly from Zach Matheny, you'll have the opportunity to do so. And Robbie, as always, man, I appreciate you joining us, and I appreciate all the passion and energy you brought to us today. Frank, conversations like this matter, especially when the answers aren't easy and the season isn't celebratory. If you found value in this discussion, I want to remind you that independent long-form conversations like this depend on listener support. If you'd like to help sustain this work, please visit LockedIn.cash to become a supporter. Your contribution helps ensure these conversations continue, honest, thoughtful, and grounded in the realities that our communities are facing. As always, thank you for listening, and thank you for locking in. Make sure you stay tuned to WTOB, because every Sunday morning, that's where you can lock in with me. But if you happen to miss me there, hopefully you're subscribed to the podcast. You can get that on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, wherever you like to get your favorite podcast. You can find me there. And until next time, y'all stay locked in.
The executive producer of the Locked In podcast is Algernon Cash for WGC. The associate producer is Tim Beeman for Such and Such Media. This podcast is copyrighted and cannot be reproduced without express written consent of WGC.